Hello and welcome back to Brain Drops, to yet again another episode. We are already at episode 8 and I'm looking forward to, of course, as always, also welcome the guy on the other side of the mic. This is, well, I would describe him as the golden voice, our podcast model. Welcome, Leonard.
Hey, Dom, how are you? Thanks for this kind invite.
Yeah, you know, I think I had to make it up. I had to make it up to you for the way you introduced me last episode. Yeah, as you have probably noticed, we are back in English, and that's because we have another English guest, and I'm happy to welcome Harper Kemp. Harper, thanks for carving out the time.
Yeah, there was plenty to carve out. I've got plenty of time on my hands right now. But thank you for having me here, Dom. You too.
Great to have you.
Yeah, Harper, I mean, you got nominated last episode. What am I even saying here? Not last episode, two episodes before, Mike Stockton nominated you. Why do you think would Mike Stockton nominate you? What do you have to tell us?
Oh, Mike. Mike probably, he's got his reasons. He probably just misses me, you know. He wants to hear my voice. He hasn't heard it in a while. I don't have a whole lot of new stories for him to hear, but I'm glad he nominated me. Glad I could get on here and catch up with you guys.
Have you already listened to a couple of episodes of ours?
I have. I listened to Adam talk for a little while. I listened to some of what Mike had to say as well. I definitely heard his shout out. And I also heard... Yeah, the last couple, they were in German, but yeah. I followed them pretty well. Bennett's got some good things to say. He's a mature young player, that guy. So
that's what I felt. He was so mature already, but yeah, different topic.
Yeah, and the one before him, I'm sorry, I forget her name, but it was nice listening to that one. It was an inspiring story, if nothing else. Mm-hmm.
And talking about German, how's your German going, Hopper?
It's going okay. I'm talking mostly to my 2-year-old daughter right now, and I only speak English to her. So I have less practice at the moment.
But you, I mean, understanding-wise, you can almost understand
everything.
Well,
you listen to our podcast, Dom, so.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. I mean, that's a good sign. I really like that.
Yeah, I'm pleasantly surprised with the way it's developed. I never thought that it was never in my plans to learn another language, but came over here and just started working on it and committing myself to it and just, you know, trying to speak a little bit every day and hear what guys are talking about, especially in the locker room, trying to pick up all that talk that, you know, they don't want you to hear in the locker room. You know, make sure they can't talk behind your back. Things like that.
All right, sounds good. I mean, yeah, Harper, just, you know, although a lot of people might know you, but, you know, maybe there are some listeners out there who don't know you. So I would like you to introduce yourself. Just tell the listeners maybe in what teams you played, what countries and whatnot.
Okay. Harper Kemp is the name. I come from America, from Arizona. I went to school out in Berkeley, played basketball for UC Berkeley. Had a nice little career there. I really, we had a Pac-10 championship there. It was a lot of fun, a lot of characters, a lot of great players, a couple good coaches. And made my way out here, 6 or 7 years ago, I think.
13, 14, I think.
Yeah, that's when I got to Göttingen. After 1 year in Greece, got to Göttingen in 2013. And yeah, I played 3 years here. I played a year in Bremerhaven up north. And then I ended up coming back here again. Did a stint in Uruguay as well.
In Uruguay, so, oh yeah.
Yeah,
I remember that one.
I've done quite a few, a few countries. But this one, Germany is my favorite.
Oh. It's maybe also because you met your wife here, huh?
That could be. That could be one of the reasons. I met her, yeah, my first few months that I ended up in Göttingen, I ran into her and it clicked. And I kept coming back. Lucky for you guys.
that's great. Harper, in retrospect, you know, what would you say were you enjoying the most playing professional basketball?
professional, well, and just basketball and my career in general, it's the enjoyment comes most from the people. I think the people that you meet along the way and the relationships that you develop. So that's always been first and foremost for me, and the biggest joy and the most lasting joy, that the kind of friendships you can build, the working relationships, the deeper friendships that develop, and some that I would, people that I would even consider family, and also, my actual family that I met because basketball brought me to a place like this. That's the deepest aside from the competition itself.
Okay, and on the other hand, was there maybe also something that you, despised?
Despised.
It's a tough word, or maybe didn't like
it's
that
a nice
much.
Nice word. We sound so professional, Dom. It's nice. Awesome.
It's a heavy word, but
thanks, Leonard.
I don't know if I despise much, but the things that that come to my mind that's the hardest, especially as a U.S. player having to travel and find jobs everywhere. The hardest part is the moving around, the having to meet new people every year, meet new teammates, adjust to a new coach, a new system. A new city. And yeah, that's, like I said, the people are the best part of it, but it's also, it can be very difficult to always have to cut off relationships and move on to the next place and try to keep up long distance relationships with friends and family. That's the most difficult and maybe, the most despised part of it.
How long was your longest stay at one team?
Professionally, that would be here in Göttingen. I think I played 3 years in a row, if I'm not mistaken, from 2013
I think on. So too.
Yeah, after my second year, I think I went over to Ludwigsburg, I signed there. Things didn't work out, and I left there pretty early and made my way back to Göttingen and had another really fun year here. We were towards the bottom of the league that year, but it was... It was a fun team. We had guys like Mattis.
Mattis was still there. Playing with us. Mattis Manninghoff.
Yeah, we had a lot of characters. But 3 years. That would be here in Göttingen. That's
and
my longest stint.
What did that do to your game? And I'm talking now also, like you said, all the relationships you build, especially with players and coaches. Did that help you at all, like staying at the same team in the same city for a longer while to like... focus more on your game because you knew all the rest and you didn't have to adapt?
Yeah, I think that's a good question because that's one of the hardest parts is finding that rhythm every time you get to a new place and finding that groove, even just the little things like, okay, getting your daily routine down at the gym and what are the facilities like and where are you getting your food from and which grocery store do you got to go to? I mean... So being in a place where you know everything, you get your rhythm down, you start to get a little more efficient with your work, you start to be able to know, what you can accomplish at certain times and things like that. And and then you're starting to build relationships with the people and you get some more motivation. And so for me personally, being able to develop that routine and being in a place longer is preferred. You improve as the time goes on there.
Yeah, interesting, because that's something also asked Bennett in the last episode, since he just came here to Göttingen from Berlin, and also not only finding like city stuff, finding your ways and all that, but also like the relationship, for example, to a coach, because coaches obviously are all different and have different approaches and different ways to interact with players. And did you ever have, I don't want to say trouble, but do you also see that you sometimes had to take some time to get used to a coach, to like, just his demeanor, his way to act?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you have to do that. Like I said, everywhere you go, whatever professional relationship it is, I would imagine in other professional realms too, although I don't have much experience in other professional worlds, everyone's a character. Everyone's got their own ways of doing things, their own philosophies. But you come to the table with the same goals and you want the same things, and you have to work out a way to get that done. And yeah, it's, you know, and even, you know, the best coaches or, you know, the best players, you know, sometimes they have crazy attitudes or they're a special character. You can think of any number of player coaches that takes some getting used to. And I'm sure I'm that kind of guy too. I'm not the right cup of tea for everybody, but we, over the years, you learn to work with everyone you're working with. And like I said, accomplishing goals together, that's the main thing.
Did it get easier for you towards the or throughout your career towards the end? Or did it like, was it always basically the same?
Yeah, I think you learn. When you're young, it's really hard to accept new roles so quickly. It's really hard to be thrown into a new situation and work your way up maybe from the bottom, or even just being thrown in, you know, in a leadership role. That can be difficult too. When you don't know anybody there, when they don't know you, it's really hard to just to jump into that. And it gets easier. You learn the tricks, how to deal with people. You learn how to neutralize heavy situations when things get hot in a locker room, or you know, even during a game. You learn everyone's personalities and just some general ways to deal with those things that work better than you know, than overreacting. And yeah, you get mature.
Okay. Yeah, Dom, that you can go ahead and ask some, I know, I call it performance or weight room questions.
Well, it's not that I'm sitting here and waiting for that. No, it is. Yeah, it is like that I'm sitting here and waiting exactly for these kind of topics. Because, you know, Harper, in general, if I ask you what the weight room meant to you during your career, I mean, I know what you always did back then when we worked together. You were always really motivated. You correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you liked to get a big lift in, maybe some heavy deadlifts, some heavy squats. But just tell the listeners a little bit how you approached the weight room during your career, and also, you know, that's how I always see things while we are in season.
Yeah, you asked what it meant to me, and right away I just think it was kind of like a sanctuary for me early on. I really loved to get in the weight room early on, and not only to make myself feel good and to feel stronger and to make improvements there in order to help me on the court. But, you know, just, you know, it relieves a lot of stress getting in there. And it's also just something I've always had a passion for it's a nice puzzle, trying to figure out your body and figure out what stuff works in the weight room and what doesn't. And throughout my career, it's always been important, especially because I had injuries early on, and it was a requirement. I had to be in the weight room doing some things to get me back on the court after some injuries, and to maintain my strength and things like that, and to give me that leg up out on the court. It's always been absolutely necessary for me. And like you said, I've always been, you know, maybe a little too aggressive in there sometimes, to a fault. And that's definitely something that I wish I knew early on a little better how to go about those things. Okay. If I had a Domseps in my life a little earlier, I'd have been playing longer.
Yeah, that would have been my next question. You know, if there was ever a change of you approaching styles of training, you know, if there was maybe towards the end of the career, you maybe put more attention to, you know, I just call it whatever, mobility, or whatever, more stretching, or, you know, was there ever a change?
Yeah, certainly. You know, and it wasn't just black and white, you know, going from one to the other. It's one of those things where I always went up and down and trying a lot of different new things. But I can definitely remember a time in college after my first knee injury mm-hmm. and surgery that I had, I really changed the way I was training. And, you know, we were doing a lot of aggressive, Olympic lifting and things mm-hmm. like that. And I was very strong in the weight room. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't always translating to the court. And that's frustrating when you think, but I'm doing everything coach wants me to do in the weight room. And you know, why am I not as explosive as I should be? And, then all the other things come into play with sleep and recovery and the rehabilitation things. And I would say college, after that first big knee injury, I really shifted to some more functional type stuff mm-hmm. and started playing with some new things to see what would work for me.
Okay. That's crazy that you say that after an injury, because that's basically been one of our theories, that some players actually start realizing that this what you said, the requirement of doing weights and stuff throughout an injury or after an injury, when they like basketball gets taken away from them.
Right. Yeah. And that's the key thing. Like you say, framing it that way, when you say it gets taken from you, you really have that feeling when you get injured. And then you turn to some, or at least I did, I turned to the weight room, you know, get some frustrations out some days, go get a pump in if you have to, and mm-hmm. to keep you motivated and focused, and realizing like, okay, I'm not back on the court yet, but there's still some goals to be reached, at least here in the weight room. Mm. And I can knock those off my list and still feel good about myself and still make progress towards getting back on the court. And yeah, when guys get injured, I've definitely noticed that they learn a little bit about how to work on the court and off the court, and how much discipline and doing the daily things and finding those routines, how much of a difference they can make to your performance. It's something you see a lot.
Hmm. And you also mentioned something really shortly, which I think is really important. So just give me your opinion on that. You said that it's actually important, like throughout your career, that in the weight room, it's a lot about trial and error. It's not about coming up with exercises everybody maybe should do. It's more trying, okay, what works for me and what can I stick with in mm-hmm. order to survive the season? Because I think we can all agree that what we do on the basketball court is not something that, you know, we are meant to do.
Yeah.
Would you say that's also something that happened to you in your career, a lot of trial and error?
Absolutely. I think that's one of the keys, and it's one of the joys of sport, of basketball, of most things that I've done, is I call it tinkering. I don't know. That's a new English word for you. I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know that one, Lenny?
Yeah, I have no clue, but anything okay. new is good for this podcast. We're exclusive.
Yeah, so tinkering. I mean, think of like a mechanic, you know, trying to figure out a car, and you got to move parts around. You got to figure out how it's built, and you got to keep going at it every day. And sometimes it doesn't work, and you got to go back to the drawing boards. But you're in there moving little parts around, the big parts, all of it. You're trying to figure out what's going to get the most out of that engine. And you're in there tinkering. You're doing those, making those adjustments. And that's also the fun part about it. It's an exercise for your brain and your will as well. It tests you.
Yeah, and it's really really interesting that you say that. And that is something I actually consider really important in doing my job. That I just, mm-hmm. you know, I think you could also call it individualization. That, you know, I actually want to find out for every player we have out there, I want to find out what works for him. And if we found it, I want the players to stick to it, you know.
Mm-hmm. So basically, Dom, you're a mechanic, huh?
Leonard, pretty smart. Yeah, okay. From now on, I call myself the mechanic.
Yeah, add that to the resume.
That's a good one, Leonard. Harper, you also touched on it, recovery, huge topic, you know, all the lifestyle factors and everything that plays into it, sleep, mobility, you name it, yeah, nutrition, of course. But what was something that really worked for you in the recovery regard?
Yeah, recovery. It's hard. It's a really, it's a huge topic, right? Yeah. There's so many different facets of it, and it's so individualized, like you said, and it requires that commitment to tinkering daily with everything. But for me, I can't think of anything specific right now that maybe was, when I came here, I would say sauna and ice baths changed my life.
You were always big on those. I remember that playing with you.
Yeah. I mean, in America, I use the sauna and steam room and things like that, but it's not as big. That's not a part of the culture. Mm-hmm. And I came here and we had access to the saunas and I started to use them and I really just started to get really great effects from it. I mean, I was starting to sleep better. I was starting to get quicker recovery. Mm-hmm. I was able to do better with my diet, just being more efficient with everything. I felt great using the sauna and mixed with ice tub as well. I say it's life changing because I'll try to have that as a part of my life from here on out. I think it's important. So that's probably the biggest.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting topic, especially sauna, because, what's out there is actually pretty conflicting. Some guys mm-hmm. say, don't do it 48 hours before the game. Mm-hmm. And there again, in the end, I always keep saying what works for you. Yeah. Just do it.
You know? Yeah, I mean, right. if you can sleep, then better 2 days before the game. I would say, okay, do it despite of all the maybe other effects it has.
Exactly.
One question I always like asking, because you said you played in different teams, and you probably also then had different SNC strength and conditioning coaches or performance coaches. Mm-hmm. How do players deal with that? Because, of course, there's always a new guy who wants to tell you something or thinks he knows something about this and that. How is that for players?
It's obviously different for everyone. And that goes back to what I was saying just about adjusting to a new place and new personalities. And you have to look at it, especially at the professional level, that this is now a professional relationship and you have to come in with an amount of respect for the person mm-hmm. that you're about to be working with the whole year. And you have to assume that guy knows something you don't. Even if, we probably were doing strength and conditioning the same amount of time, you and I are not that different in age, but I see you and you're doing the work. And you're being honest about what you know, and you're saying, well, if you don't know, you're saying you don't know. But you're there to help, and you're there to help me make adjustments and things like that. And so for some guys, that can be difficult to create that new relationship and build that, but it's really necessary. They've got to come in and be willing to work with that person right away. It's because the quicker you can do that, the quicker you can build on your body, build on your goals together.
Were you ever in a situation where a strength and conditioning coach told you stuff or wanted you to do some exercises that you didn't agree with or even were thinking, oh, this is actually bad for my body, I've done this?
Always, every day. You come in every day, I'm sure even, they tell you to do something and in the back of your mind, you don't want to do it. So you start to build up the excuses and say, but it's not good for this and it's not good for that. And it's always, I don't do that. That's not the way I do things. And, there's an argument for that because some guys, they do things a certain way and it works for them and they do it their whole life. But for me personally, I've always had to find new ways of doing things and to avoid that plateau and to avoid getting, a little lazy or lackadaisical, to find new things, not only for my brain to pique the interest, but, I think your body needs that as well in the weight room or wherever it is you're working. It's you got to switch it up and trying, if it's something new, there's no harm in trying it typically, maybe not a day before a game.
Yeah, exactly.
you hope that a strength and conditioning coach won't throw that at you, a new lift the day before a game or a new conditioning drill. But yeah, it's important.
Or wild volumes, for example, just out of the blue. That's something I would never do, especially not in season.
Yeah, right. I'm just kidding.
That's something I would probably do on my own.
So let's just assume tomorrow you go back. You're back on the court, professional player. Is there something you would do maybe different from all your experience?
Oof.
Is there something you maybe would approach in a different way in regards to taking care of your body?
Yeah, do I get to go all the way back to the beginning?
All the way.
That's a good one.
I say that because that's probably the one biggest regret I have is when I was just a freshman in high school, I had an unrelated, but I had an injury just below my knee. I had a staph infection, and I had to take some bone out, and it was a long recovery process, and I was a young kid who didn't have anyone to tell me to slow down. So as soon as the doctor said, yeah, it's okay for you to start doing stuff again, I was back on the court playing. And you know, you're a young kid. Yeah. You can do that probably away with it for a while. But when I think about it, it led to a lot of other mechanical issues that I've been dealing with ever since.
Mm-hmm.
And I've managed them. And like we talked about, I learned from those injuries a lot of other things about how to be successful and how to approach learning and developing your skills. But yeah, I would go back and tell myself to take a little more time to recover from those injuries, from all of them. It's something that guys don't usually do. It's something that I never did. And I would take more time.
And talking about mechanics, you probably mean that you picked up like movement patterns from, you know, how to cope with that injury so it doesn't hurt as bad anymore, you know, when you started, or did you mean anything different?
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. Yeah. I mean your muscles and everything start to work a little differently, and you know, you don't notice it at first, but it builds up and builds over time, and each injury adds a new wrinkle to that. And I found myself just playing catch up from then on, you know, through college and through my professional years. And yeah, it was the toughest part about it, always having to manage those injuries and things like that. But like I said, there was some blessings that came out of it, and learning how to work and learning the discipline, that daily discipline it takes to get back out on the court and to set goals and reach them, even if they're little daily goals.
And let's just put the focus back to the weight room a little bit. Now let's say you go back. Earlier you said that you switched your focus a little bit from lifting heavy to, let's say, more functional related training. Mm-hmm. Would that also be something you maybe would switch, or?
Yeah, I might have done that earlier. You know, I probably would have kept the heavy lifting and things like that, but I just done it with a little smarter. I mean, there's, like I said, I never let myself recover. I was always wanting to get back in there the next day, even healthy or injured. I just never had enough patience with myself. I still don't most days. Patience with my daughter, but not with myself. So maybe I saved it all for her. Who knows? Maybe that's the blessing in disguise. But I would have definitely had patience in the weight room and figured out, okay, I can do these heavy lifts and really build this kind of strength, and then switch up the training regimen and start to, you know, try to find some of that potential in those muscles to get more explosive or to be a little faster. And it was that's definitely something I would change earlier.
Mm-hmm. And what I also would like to know, because, you know, of course, during a long career playing professional basketball, there's always a lot of wear and tear on the body. You know, there's always little things you have to deal with. You're probably never 100% healthy, you know.
Yeah.
How is it now? Would you say that, you know, after your career was finished, did you notice a right away change to your body? Like all these little aches and pains, did they go away or?
They're not gone yet.
They're not gone yet. All right.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I got injured early on, and it kept building little injuries every couple of years, and they add up, certainly. And like I was saying, Leonard, that the mechanical issues, those don't really go away.
Mm.
And you keep walking differently. Your foot's turning the wrong way. My knee's not extending right. My hip hinge is off. I still have to wake up every morning and loosen everything up.
You sound like Adam a little bit in the one episode where he talked about his body.
Yeah, and he's still playing, man. That guy's a warrior. But man, it's I don't expect it to stop at this point. It's the price you pay for playing at a high level for so long. And yeah, I knew it going in. You have some awareness of you're going to beat yourself up for 10 years, and they tell you it's going to be painful. Well, you see coaches walking around when you're younger, right? You see coaches walking to gyms with weird walks, and they got limps. Yeah. I can think of a few right now. I won't throw their names out, but and you go, well, what? Why does he walk like that? Like, well, probably because he played basketball for 15 years, 20 years, and you wonder. You tell yourself, I'm not going to walk like that when I'm older. There's no way. When I'm a coach, I'm going to come in here and dunk on these guys. But that's, yeah, it's far from the truth.
But did it get any better? I mean,
yeah, and you know, in some ways, for sure, you don't have as much of the heavy load on your joints, but you have. There's some other problems. I mean, your body gets used to that kind of intensity and that kind of pressure, and when that goes away, there's something missing almost, and that was difficult for me the last 2 years, a year and a half or so, really, you know, trying to figure out what's going on with me. What, you know, I don't know what it is. What system in my body? Is it my hormones, or, you know, is it just in my head? I really need to get back in the weight room? Mm. Do I need to go do something else? So the pain's still there. And then you got, you know, you're not responding the same way to everything that you're doing because you don't have that daily 2 hours of practice where, you know, it solves a lot of your problems. It can be even more difficult in some sense when you're done.
Hmm.
Yeah.
But are you maybe able to narrow it down a little bit to, are you maybe now able to say, okay, this kind of stuff helps me pretty good? That's something I haven't figured out while I was playing.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I would say yoga is a staple. It's the one-stop shop to just loosen up all my joints and get the blood flow going, keep some mobility, you know, and really just, you know, get your heart rate up, and it's also breath work and things like that. Things that you lose once you're not being forced to do that every day in practice, and that can be difficult. But that's one. The yoga has definitely been a staple since I've been done. It's a go-to.
So how was that transitioning into retirement, and then also like this keep working out because your body is used to it. You somehow feel it that your body needs some, I don't know, some input, I guess. And then also mentally keeping yourself, you know, like to work out, to actually go out there and do stuff.
Yeah, it changes once there's no reward, right?
You don't get paid for it anymore.
Yeah, you're not getting paid, and you're not getting the camaraderie with the guys.
Yeah.
You're not winning games. You're not fighting against the other team. You're not doing those things. And something's lacking, and it's you forget, or you don't realize when you're in it how big of it is, how big a part of your life it is. It's in every facet. You know, I stopped playing, and then suddenly, I haven't hung out with the guys in a while. Usually you're hanging out with them every day, practice after practice, you're eating lunch together, you're doing all these things, and you get that what you need, some friendships and that professional relationship as well. And when that's gone, it's a little bit of a, you can fall into a hole with it for sure. I did at times. Certainly gets a little dark here and there. You want to get back out there, and it can be tough. But the adjustment just takes time. I think time is what heals it all, hopefully.
And how was it? Well, you touched already on it mentally. Not having, having to practice all this hangout stuff, but, and then what's now your motivation? That's actually what I want to ask. What makes you get up now to, you know, like now if you work out, you don't destroy in the next game or get that reward. Like you said, now it's different rewards. What keeps you going now in that regard?
Well, as far as, I mean, waking up and getting after it. I mean, I got a baby girl that is ready to go at 6 in the morning. So, I've got to get a little bit of sleep the night before, and I've got to take care of myself a little so that I can be there for her. Mm-hmm. But as far as the workouts themselves, I actually, you know, find myself motivated a lot to work out.
Oh, really?
But it's so much harder to get the kind of workout that you can get in a professional setting when you have all the tools available to you. You take that for granted.
Oh, yeah.
When you're a pro. You got physio, you've got a strength coach, you've got a coach telling you what drill to do next. You've got your buddies, you're playing with them, you're playing side by side, and I mean, you're figuring those things out together. But you know, it's, sorry, I'm losing my train of thought here. But
so maybe just
a little emotional about it. But you know, I'm starting to think about it.
So how does a workout look like for you now? You said yoga already?
I do way too much, and then I'm done for 2 or 3 days. That's pretty much the way it works. Yeah, so what happened, like I said, you know, I get that feeling like I got to do something. My body needs something, and I start to work out. And, you know, I start to get warmed up, and then you start to feel good again. Once the blood's flowing, you're like, oh, my back doesn't hurt. My ankle's fine. My knee's good. and then I do too much. I start jumping around, you know, jumping too many steps at a time. And it's just, and then I do, you don't have the recovery system in place.
Yeah.
I don't got ice bath and sauna available right away. And then you pay for it for a few days. Mm-hmm. It starts to hurt, and then you don't want to get back out there. And so it's a vicious cycle. Then once you get back out there, you're just chomping at the bit to go really hard and get that deep workout in, and just to feel it in your soul when you're done. Mm. You know, just be so tired you can't get up the next day. You kind of I crave that a little bit, but you just can't do it anymore.
I mean, I have to say, I also see you sometimes. Well, I don't personally see you, but I see it on Instagram that you still sprint up the hills. Is that true?
Yeah. Well, the hills. Yeah, I've always been a fan of running hills. Uh-huh. It's just, it feels good. Well, it feels terrible while you're doing it, of course. But it was always the easiest way for me to get a compact, efficient workout in. Hmm. I can go out for 20 minutes and really just get everything I need. And these days, it's more of a mechanical issue. My knee doesn't really extend all the way anymore. So going uphill is actually a little better than a long distance run like I used to do. Hmm. I used to love doing endurance workouts, but I really just can't run for too long, for more than 20 minutes or so. So got to get after it on those hills or the stairs.
Nice.
And then now you started coaching, and now you're on the sidelines switching roles. And do you also have that feeling sometimes that you described with working out, that you also still want to get out there when you see your players, you know, practicing playing?
Yeah, when I see them messing up, I definitely want to get out there and show them how to do it. Andy and Phil, if you're listening. But no, I mean, yeah, I definitely still get that. It's maybe not while I'm coaching and in the moment, but I would say definitely while I'm watching film and things like that. I just, because I remember the times watching myself on film to try and you know, see what, to improve my game and things like that, the hours and hours you spend throughout the years. And then now I'm doing it as a coach to help those other guys. And yeah, you get that feeling like, oh, I wish I was back out there. And yeah, I definitely get that feeling. It comes up every now and then.
Maybe take us through after retirement. I guess you started thinking of, what do I want to do now after basketball? And you came up with coaching. That was the option right away? Or did it take you a while and you're still not confident if it's actually coaching or something else? Talk a little bit about that.
I think coaching has been, what do you say, a part of the plan since I was young. At least on the back of my mind, something that I always wanted to try. And I think with every coach I had, I was always really looking to see and paying attention how they did things and trying to figure out how I would do things if I was coaching. And of course, always thinking that I would do it better, as most of us do. You know, you always think that you'd be a better coach. But once I was finished, I wasn't sure. There was a time when then maybe I went away from that and I thought, coaching, it's probably not for me. I think once I'm done playing, I'll just move on to something else. But I couldn't. I found myself trying to maybe think about some other jobs I might want to start up or another career path. And the coaching just kept coming back to my mind. And I'm starting relatively small here in Göttingen at the ASC. But I'm really enjoying it. I felt falling back in love with the game in different ways and remembering why I love the game also, and just trying to keep motivated with it, because it's a lot of fun. It's very rewarding too. Mm-hmm. Depending on what level you're at as well. I mean, there's a lot of different facets of it, whether it's development and with the older guys actually being, you know, having to develop the strategies and game plans and training plans. It's a lot of fun work.
Interesting. I actually stumbled on one little story. I don't even know anymore who told me that, but I heard that, it's a little bit more specific question now. Mm-hmm. I heard that during one training session, you got the guys together and you were asked, maybe if I'm wrong, you can correct me, of course, and you were asking them that they say in front of everybody what they want to improve this year.
Yeah.
My question now is where does that come from? Is that something you picked up during your professional career, or is that something maybe a former coach did and you liked it, or is that just something you thought about? Maybe I'm wrong. Yeah. Am I even right?
No, I'm sure I did that at some point. That's something that I think is important. That's some most coaches I've had over the years have done, the good ones especially. You make a player think of what they want to get done, and you make them say it out loud, and say it to the team or to the coach at the very least, and maybe even write it down. There's a lot of different ways you can do it, but it's putting that commitment out there for themselves, and then we're all, you know, honest about what we want out of everything, and then we all know what all our goals are, whether they're the individual goals as well as the team goals, and really hashing all that out, I think, is really important, especially early on in the season, and as you go along in the season, you should revisit that as well. Mm-hmm. That's something, any good coach I've had has done throughout the years.
Okay.
What are other things that you picked up from your coaches, or maybe didn't pick up on purpose because you didn't like it?
I'll go with picking up. let's see, things that I've picked up. Well, you know, I guess I don't know what I've picked up quite yet because I haven't been coaching long enough to know, you know, what kind of techniques and tactics I'm going to use. I'm sure I'll keep remembering things. But, you know, aside from just tactical things and offenses and the way you build a practice, that's building the practice and the training sessions, I think, is one of the most important things other than building relationships. And I loved learning that in college under Coach Mike Montgomery. You know, he always used the terminology whole, part, whole, and bringing in, you're starting with, that sounds a little weird just with audio, but by whole, I mean, you know, the whole piece, the whole puzzle. You show the whole puzzle first, and maybe it looks confusing, but then you start to break that down, and you break it apart into pieces, and you start to learn the pieces, and then you put it back together and learn it again. And it's something you can do daily, and you do over the year as well. And just that concept and that way of thinking about things really stuck with me over the years, not just with basketball, but with everything. And I mean, he was a teacher as well. So if you're teaching anything, it's a really good technique to use. But I would say that's been a part of the way I build practices as well, because I always think of, okay, well, what's this practice going to be about? What's our overall goal? And what do we start with? What are the breakdowns going to be? How are we going to, you know, what drills are we going to do? What are we going to emphasize throughout the practice? And how are we going to come back together and put it all together as a team? So that's always on my mind when I'm developing a practice or thinking of a training plan that I want to put together.
And now the other part, what did you not pick up?
What did I not pick up? I'm sure, well, other than all the lessons I'm sure I've missed over the years, there's...
Yeah, for sure, probably.
You know, I always saw the way that coaches interact with players, and you can always see from the outside looking in when a coach completely turns off a player mentally or psychologically. And that's something I never wanted to do. I always wanted to keep... I don't want to do. I'm acting like I've been a coach for 20 years here, but I don't want to do that with players. I want to be able to keep the communication open, to keep it doesn't have to be friendly and always feel good, but it has to be on a level where you want the same things and you're trying to help each other. And to be able to do that with players is important. And when it can happen in a lot of different ways, whether it's being too harsh with a guy or being too soft with a guy. That's also a possibility. It's just, so being able to read your players and read the room and read the team, I guess is, I haven't figured it out yet. I'm sure it's something you got to learn by experience, but that's one thing I see some coaches do wrong, I don't know if that's the word, but it doesn't help.
Did you ever pick up stuff during your career or where coaches did that great, like this not having any players tune out and then they're just there for the rest of the season not caring anymore, or any, like, I think that's an interesting topic. Maybe you could talk about that a little bit more, maybe how, when you saw how a coach lost the player, or the opposite, how he got him back tuned in.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to think of any specific examples right now. So I mean, what's your question here? Just keep expanding on that?
Maybe I change it a little bit to, do you think it's only the responsibility of only the coach, or how much of a part do the players on the team actually play?
It definitely is not only on the coach. It's a two-way street there. It's about respect. And mein Schwiegervater, he always says, respect ist kein Einbahnstraße. So it's got to go both ways. But it starts with the coach. They set the tone.
Okay.
They're making the rules, and they set the tone. So they've got to be able to do that as well as the players, and they have to expect that from the players also. And that leads to being able to get players to buy in daily. And it's the hardest thing to do. I've never seen a coach accomplish that with every player for an entire year. It's just the way team sports are, I think. When you got 15 guys in a locker room, you're going to lose some of them for some period of time. Hmm. And hopefully you can get them back on board. It happens, guys lose focus. They lose sight of the goals and the purpose. And it's up to the coach to get that back. I imagine that's the most difficult part of coaching, from what I've witnessed and the talks I've had with my own coaches. It's hard.
Did you ever play with a player where he or had somebody lead the team that actually did that really great? Like this positive influence you can have as a player. You know, something that a coach can't really have since he's not on the court with him. Did any player that you played with stick out to you there?
Yeah, for sure. Over the years, I've had quite a few players like that. Let's see, who pops to mind right now is a guy like Theo Robertson back at Cal. A guy that most of what he did was by example. He didn't talk as much, but he did it all by example and was really able to get everyone to buy in daily just by showing people how to do it. And, you know, not making excuses, things yeah. like that. And I would say a guy that I saw do it definitely more verbally and with his energy and emotion was a guy like Khaled Al-Amin. I mean, he would walk into the room with the experience he had. I don't want to say, you know, I mean, he was the old guy in the room, but he had the youngest energy somehow. You know, he had that energy about him and, you know, convincing everyone that it was going to be a good day, that whatever was happening, everything was going to be fine. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, we're just there to play basketball and we're all in it for the same thing. So, you know, stop your crying and let's all get back to work. He was that kind of guy. Mm-hmm.
And apart from that, anything else you could tell the listeners about, like, playing together with Khaled Al-Amin?
Ooh, Khaled, yeah, I haven't played with a whole lot of players where I was, like, maybe slightly intimidated by their knowledge of the game or ability to read the game so quickly. I always felt on most teams I was on was like, well, you know, I'm a pretty smart player. I got a high basketball IQ, and then you run into a guy like Khaled, and you're like, wow, he's making me feel stupid out here. He's giving me, but he would do it in a good way. Obviously, in the middle of practice, if he had some direction for me, even if I was resistant at first, like I said, he could convince you that this was the way to do it. Not just because he was the more experienced player, but because he was persuasive in that way, and he did it in a really positive fashion, which was good. It was impressive.
Also really calm, right?
Yeah, I think that maybe is the key. Just never lost his head, always calm, and always easy to talk to and to communicate with.
Mm. Yeah, and this calmness, especially in pointing out mistakes, you know, like, because it's like you said, at first, of course, you're doing it, because you think it's right. And then you have somebody telling you, no, this is not the way. This is really tough for somebody to accept, I think. And that's then we're back to what you were saying, calmness and the way Khaled probably just gave himself all around the team anytime that you would always listen to him and the respect he had.
Yeah.
Dom, I see on the script you have some... you have a question about the change of the big man game. Maybe you want to slide into that.
Exactly. I'm just looking at my little script here, and that's actually a question I think is really interesting, and I would like Harper to to chip in on that one. So Harper, basketball lately changed a lot. Mm-hmm. We're just talking about big men's here. Like the classic old big man is still out there, mm-hmm. but you know, that's how I would put it, not as much as it used to be. So for example, today you probably see less post-ups, like big men need to switch a lot, mm-hmm. And also big men tend to shoot a little more to space the court and everything.
Yeah.
Is that something you also needed to get used to? And if so, how did you manage to adjust?
Yes. Definitely, it has changed. You're right about that, and I've witnessed it over the years and been a part of it too. I would say probably the last team I was on where, you know, we really had that element where we were anchored by some post play was my first year here. Obviously, our style wasn't focused directly on that, but. At that level, I was able to be very successful in that classic big man role, mm-hmm. As were a few other guys. I mean, even guys like, you know, Ruoff could do everything at every facet of the game, but he could also post guys up, and that was a big part of our repertoire.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it went away after that, and I think you have to adjust by adding some skills. You have to recognize that there's a lot of ways to contribute on the floor, and if you're not catching the ball with your back to the basket every time and making post moves, you got to find somewhere else to be effective. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that I think for me that came with just watching a lot of film, obviously working on your ball handling, things like that, and trying to extend your range. It's just there's all kinds of things you can do depending on what kind of team you're on. But in general, you got to start with the skill at a young age. I think guys and guys are doing that now. You see everyone's training to be a point guard. It's with the way they handle the ball and the way they're trying to get guys to read the floor. They're expecting all five guys to do it. Unless you're a 7-footer or you're catching lobs all day, you got to be able to do a little bit of everything.
Do you think that helped you, this change?
Yeah, well, helped me personally. I think I did a good enough job of adjusting and was able to keep contributing. I think I didn't rely on just being in that role, and that, especially because I was already an undersized big. So I wouldn't say that I was even, you know, a true classic big man, especially as I got older, and then the opponents got bigger, stronger, faster. I think I did an okay job of that throughout my career, and it was difficult though. You think the game is supposed to be played a certain way, and you got to keep adjusting as you move up in the level of play. And as the years have gone by, things have changed. So you got to keep paying attention, watching film, watching other players, other teams.
And you got to keep working on yourself, of course.
Yeah.
You say moving up. We played together in, I think you said, 13. And we actually moved up a league from Pro A, the German second league, to the first league. And there, of course, some adjustments were made. And can you talk to us a little bit about that? First of all, maybe, you know, of course, listeners would expect that second league to first league is a big step. But also, how did you try to manage this? How did you make yourself, like, how did you learn to play in first league, basically?
Like you said, the level is certainly different. It's a step up, but I think the biggest step comes from just the depth of teams and the depth of those rosters. You know, every game you're battling, and it's the there's high quality players on the other side of the floor. And, you know, maybe one level down, you have just a few less high quality players. And as you go down, it gets that way. I mean, you got killers at every level, guys that can get buckets, guys that can put the ball in the basket. But do you have that across the board? And it changes the game. It becomes a lot more tactical. You really got to pay attention to what your role is, and on your own team, on my team as well. For example, then, you know, we are adding a lot more firepower. You're adding guys like Raymar and Khaled to the roster. When you already got me and Alex and Dom Spohr and Dunbar, guys like that, you got guys that we can score. We can do that. We can play. We can put minutes in. And now you got to adjust your own role in your team as well. That can be sometimes the most difficult thing for players, because there's a lot of guys out there that are playing at different levels, that are skilled, that can play and that can play with anybody. But can they accept a role? Can they discover their role and play that way for a whole season? It changes things.
So that's probably something. I was going to ask you some advice for some players that are, or maybe I sometimes watch players and I see them 1 year first league, then second league, the back and forth, and then sometimes you just end up thinking, oh yeah, he's just a second league player. But so you would say it's not only skill, it's also more this, what you just described a little bit, accepting the role, being smart and understanding the game and stuff like that.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well said.
Where would you, could you put a balance to that, the actual talent, and then we just call it all the rest? How much do you think is talent in percent? Or like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Whew, yeah. Is talent a myth or is it all... You know, is it all hard work and learning? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's something that I don't know if you can even figure that out. But the one thing that's for certain is that it doesn't. If you are talented, which there's so many guys out there that can't translate that talent to that higher level because they can't figure out those finer details. That you need to figure out how to work with a team of a team full of talented guys, not just you're the only one or there's one or two guys. It's really difficult.
Okay, I think we touched a lot of subject. I think you already said a lot of interesting things.
I said a lot. I don't know if anything was interesting.
No, it was for sure.
I don't know how fast I'm talking either. So I've been listening to you guys on like 1.5 speed on the podcast because that's how I listen to a lot of them. So I don't know if I was talking too fast the whole time.
No, I thought it was great.
You guys have any more questions going any direction, any topic we wanted to touch?
I mean, I'm
good. Got any more over here, Dom?
Oh, we touched on basically everything I wanted you to ask.
Cool.
Harper, anything you wanted to talk about, ask us or something?
Well, the only thing I'm curious about is how things are going with a professional basketball team right now, how operations are going, I mean, and organization. It's a difficult time for everyone, but sports is taking a hit right now. There's not much to do.
No, I mean, what should I say? I think nobody has ever been in, Well, I have at least never been in this situation. I think we're still lucky that, you know, a player can still come in and like work on his own.
Yeah. So that are you guys still doing that? They're doing isolated individual stuff.
Yeah. There's for the moment there's nothing more possible, and of course everybody in the organization is wants to find out how we proceed, of course, and it's a tough situation, of course.
Hoping that there's still basketball next year.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I hope as well. But, you know, nobody really knows, huh? That's
yeah, it's so hard to see further than a couple weeks at a time right now with everything going on. So
yeah,
it's,
and you don't know how it develops, you know.
Yeah, it's a tough state of mind to endure right now.
Yeah,
I got one more question, and it's a very, very important one. Harp, who's your nominee? Who do you nominate?
Ooh, nominees.
No, I'm excited.
Well, I mentioned Khaled. He's going to be an interesting guy to talk to if you
get
him on.
Maybe you need to send him a message so he feels obligated to do this.
I'm not going to strong arm him. You send him. You try first. I don't know how much sway I've got over him. But yeah, he would be certainly interesting to talk to and fun to listen to what he's been up to and what's going on with him. I'd be curious. Another guy, Dominic Spohr, for sure.
Oh yeah, he's great guy.
I can surely talk to him for you guys. He's
another Dom. That can only be great.
Another Dom, an only slightly stronger Dom.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds great. So you get us a Dom on the show when we try
Dom
our best.
Or Dom DeMello, another Dom.
Oh, another Dom, Dominic Baenza DeMello. Oh, interesting. Oh,
yes, great idea. Oh, damn, Harp, three nominees. This puts a lot of pressure on us.
Yeah, yeah.
I like all three of them, though.
Yep, me too. Same here.
Good. Well, good luck getting them on the show. And thanks for having me, guys. This was a lot of fun. My first podcast ever.
I think cool. You did a great job. Thanks for coming out.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, and to appreciate the listeners again, thanks for listening. We hope you picked up some brain drops from Harp's talks, from our question. I think it was a nice episode. Let us know what you think about it. If you have any questions, send us a message on Instagram. And yes, see you soon.